I'm Marty Moscow-Wain. Welcome back to Radio Times. Some new research published in Child Development found that young teenagers who try to act cool in school were at risk for problems when they became adults. Their so-called pseudo-mature behavior, including minor delinquency, early romantic relationships, and hanging out with their good-looking peers, made them popular when they were 13, not so when they were 23. If you remember your teenage years or attended your high school reunion recently, you know the kind of kids we're talking about. The study got us thinking about teenagers and school status, why being popular puts some kids at risk, and what about the not-so-popular kids, our topic for today's Radio Times. We have two guests who have joined us, and let me introduce them to you. Bradford Brown is professor and chair of human development in the Department of Educational Psychology at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And Bradford Brown, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good to be here, Marty.
Also with us is Mitch Prinstein, and he's a distinguished professor of psychology and also a director of clinical psychology at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. He studies adolescent peer relationships and psychological adjustment. And Mitch Prinstein, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
You're welcome. And I feel the need to ask both of you this question. Were you a popular kid in school, or put another way to you, Mitch, where were you in the social hierarchy of middle school or high school?
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know that any of us really know where we stood. But I was definitely the very active kid that was on every club that made the morning announcements in the high school. Everyone knew who I was, but I don't know that I was the popular kid.
How about for you, Bradford?
Well, in middle school, I think perhaps I was very well liked by the teachers, not so much by the peers.
Oh, so what does that make you?
That makes me envious of the popular kids.
Aren't we all?
In a certain way, I think envious and jealous, and that's part of the problem that's highlighted in the study.
Well, in fact, let me get back to the study, because it's talking about a certain kind of cool kid or popular kid. These are kids that engage in this, what they called pseudo-mature behavior. Mitch, if I can go back to you, what do we mean by that, or what do the researchers mean by pseudo-mature behavior?
Well, there are certain risk behaviors that really signal that an adolescent is acting more like an adult or an older adolescent. Things like substance use or early initiation of sexual activity. And these are ways that adolescents can try and make themselves seem like they're doing what their peers value and less what their parents want them to do.
And Bradford, why are they seen as cool, and are they seen as, and why are they popular as well?
In most schools in the United States, middle school is a brave new world. It's a world that is run much more by peers than it is by adults. So it's important, I think, for young people to differentiate themselves from older adults and adult authority. And these are good ways of doing that.
Do the kids looking at these so-called cool kids, do they like them? Do they want to be part of their group? Do they hate them? Do they envy them, Bradford?
Yes, some really interesting research indicates that most kids would really like to be part of that group. And so they look up to these individuals and like them. But when they're not part of the group, and when they're not treated well by the popular kids, they become envious, jealous, and then start to dislike them. So curiously, the popular kids are not necessarily well liked.
But Mitch, are we talking about, I don't want to use like bad kids, but these are kids that are, I mean, if there's mild delinquency going on, so these are kids that perhaps are getting into trouble.
It's interesting. Research is showing that there are really two different ways of thinking about popularity. There are the kids that are very well liked, and there are the kids that are really looked up to and popular, as Brad is saying. And some of these popular kids in high school are the ones that are really well liked, but some of them are those class clowns, the ones that some kids really dislike. So in a way, it's a mixed bag. And when we're talking about these popular adolescents, we're really talking about two different groups.
There's the groups that the kids like, and then the group that are popular and kids don't necessarily like them.
That's right. They're the high-status kids that also tend to be very kind and empathic and get along with everybody. And then there are the popular kids that are a little bit more aggressive. They're bullies. They really try and make themselves seem better by being mean to others.
Well, I'm thinking of Mean Girls, right, Bradford?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Bradford?
Yeah, that's definitely true. And when we talked to, just to follow what Mitch is saying here, when we talked to some middle schoolers and asked them to name names of the different groups or crowds in their school, they would differ between the popular nice kids, who are not the mean girls, and the popular not-so-nice kids, right, the more aggressive group.
And I'm assuming, Brad, they're mean girls, and then they're the mean boys that go along with them, right?
You know, I think that may be true, but we're not as much in touch with the groups of guys as we are with girls. For some reason, we've studied the girls more, and perhaps the social dynamics in early adolescent girls' groups are more complicated than among boys, who kind of will take it as it comes.
Have you looked at boys, Mitch?
It's also, it's tricky. The kids that are very well-liked are also the kids that are very popular, more so for boys than for girls. Girls tend to much more strongly dislike their popular girl peers. And for boys, those are sometimes more of the same group.
Well, being a girl, girls can be mean. What can I say? and judgmental and, you know, and sort of mercurial at the same time.
It's interesting. Girls really, if you want to hurt a girl, you damage her social relationships. If you want to hurt a boy, you damage his sense of dominance and power. And the extent to which girls can be mean and girls can use social status and popularity as a weapon might be related to that.
How about appearance? How much does that matter, Brad?
I think a fair amount, in two different ways. First of all, we kind of have norms of who's physically attractive and who's not. But the other aspect of appearance is just, what are you wearing? And how are you presenting yourself in terms of your clothing style, right down to the color of your notebooks? Those are all really important cues to whether you're with it or not, whether you're cool or not.
And even going back to the study, is that it looks like they gravitate towards or hang out with good-looking peers. Mitch, does that make sense to you as someone that studies psychology in teenagers?
It does. Unfortunately, it's not just facial attractiveness that is a huge predictor of popularity, but also body attractiveness, which has a lot to do with a lot of the weight-related concerns that girls and increasingly boys are starting to have.
And kids are judgmental. What can I say? I mean, we all are, but it seems, adolescence is a time, Mitch, of a lot of judgments about one's peers and who's in and who's out.
And a lot of social comparisons. I mean, kids are really starting to become their own individuals, not just mirroring their parents' values and their parents' hopes for them. And as they're trying to figure out who they are, they look to their peers and compare themselves as a way of figuring out what makes them distinct and what makes them feel good. And those social comparisons sometimes come with mean labels.
Well, you know, Brad, going back to you, and I think anyone that's lived through their adolescence and looks back is, first of all, happy that they survived it and sort of embarrassed about some of the things that they did, myself included, but also feeling that even if you were considered cool, you never quite felt cool. I mean, there were always, and perhaps this is sort of part of the development and the brain development at that time, but even if you looked like you had it together inside, you didn't feel like you did.
And I think that's in part, Marty, because so much is changing. We move into a brand new school system that has different rules. Our body is changing from day to day. The rules of engagement with peers is changing from day to day, and lots of new experiences. I really haven't related that much to the other sex and to dating and so on. Mm-hmm. It's just like any of us who are trying out something new for the first time, we're a little uncertain. Now when we're trying lots of new things at the same time, you can imagine why it's such an awkward, uncomfortable time of life.
It's a hard time, Mitch, being an adolescent.
It is. And I wonder if it's a little bit harder now than it was even decades ago, because kids are trying to put together a profile, a way of presenting themselves to others online in a way that none of us had to do. So there's a salience to what your reputation is and how you portray yourself that's new, and that gives them more pressure.
I wonder, too, going back to the study and these pseudo-mature kids, or these kids acting in pseudo-mature ways, and Mitch, I'll put this to you, whether underneath all that is just they are riddled with insecurities. I mean, the reason people act a certain way is to cover up the things that are really perhaps fearful to them.
It's interesting. The kids who are engaging in some of these pseudo-mature behaviors, some of them are the kids that we would think of as being more of the troublemakers, the kids that were really aggressive or really rejected early on. And suddenly they become the friends and the partners in engaging in some of these behaviors with those popular kids. So you really do get the risk takers doing these things for different reasons, either because they've had a long history of engaging in risk behavior mm-hmm. or because they're trying to do what seems cool.
But does this tell us, Brad, that they're, you know, these are troubled kids? Is that how we should think about them?
I don't think necessarily so. I think that looking at the study in particular, these are kids who have found a way to work this new system very effectively, and they just try to continue to work it in the same way as life goes on, even though, of course, the rules of the game change.
And is that why they tend to have problems as adults, which is that, as you say, Brad, the rules have changed, and what was perhaps cool at 13, not so cool when you're 23?
Right. You know, I have my favorite recipe for banana bread, and it works well. I know there are other recipes for banana bread out there, but why try something new when I've got something that's proven? And it works the same way, I think, in, for example, romantic relationships. If it's been cool for me to try to date a whole bunch of people in middle school, why not try that in high school and later on? But, of course, in high school and later on, we want to have more long-term relationships.
But you're saying it works in adolescence because you're popular because of it, and you get to sort of play out your desires and impulses?
Yes, and because, of course, not only you get to play out your desires and impulses, but you get approval for it, as Mitch was talking about.
So these are the question, Mitch, is, you know, these cool kids, do they feel cool at doing what they do?
I'm not sure if they feel cool. They certainly get a lot of feedback from others to suggest that what they're doing is valued, at least in the moment. I'm curious whether these kids are missing out on the opportunity to learn something else and learn a different recipe for banana bread at that point. You know, other kids at this point, if they're not so focused on popularity, they're learning how to develop close, meaningful relationships with their friends. They're learning how to be kind to others and tolerant. And I wonder if there's an opportunity to learn that skill later as effectively if you missed out on it because you were so focused on trying to be popular.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll pick up on our conversation. I also want to get our callers to join us on Radio Times, talking with Mitch Prinstein. He's a distinguished professor of psychology, also director of clinical psychology at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. He studies adolescent peer relationships and psychological adjustment. Also with us, Bradford Brown, professor and chair of human development in the Department of Educational Psychology at the University of Wisconsin Madison, and we called them up to join us on Radio Times to jump off the study we've been talking about, how cool kids with this pseudo-mature behavior, yes, they might be popular in middle school or high school, not so much when they grow up. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Westchester University has been offering graduate studies for over 50 years. Today, Westchester has over 70 graduate degree and certificate programs in business and public affairs, health, visual and performing arts, education, arts and sciences, and their new doctorate of nursing practice. With campuses in suburban Chester County, the new Center City, Philadelphia location, or online. Details at wcupa.edu/grad. Graduate education at Westchester University. Learn more.
Most people want their wild violets to vanish. But on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll help someone whose purple posies are being eaten before she can enjoy them and identify the culprit as a creature welcome in any landscape. Plus a primer on proper tree planting and answers to all your growing questions. That's You Bet Your Garden, Saturday morning at 11, right here on WHYY-FM.
I'm Robin Young. A quadruple amputee waiting for a double arm transplant turns to comedy.
A therapist came in and said, "This experience has been really traumatic. Do you feel depressed about it?" I said, "Yeah, it makes me feel like slitting my wrist." You know, I mean, you have to laugh at these things because otherwise you just weep.
Next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe, talking with Bradford Brown and Mitch Prinstein about cool kids, popular kids. We're also going to be talking about the nerds, the geeks, the loners, those kids that were the in-crowd and the out-crowd in middle school and high school. Were you one of those kids? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moscoe. I wonder, we've been focusing on the study in a particular brand of cool kid or popular kid. Mitch, if I can go back to you. So how do you suggest a parent of one of these kids, or maybe a teacher that has these kids in their classroom, how do you suggest they deal with them?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's so much social reinforcement from adolescents to be cool that it's very, very hard to combat. In fact, there's a lot of research that's recently saying that adolescents' brains are wired to be attuned to that kind of reinforcement specifically. So you're really working an uphill battle. But I do think that helping kids to try and think about the longer-term picture can be a good start.
Because as this study says, it does, this kind of behavior does put them at risk for things like alcohol or drug problems when they become adults.
That's right.
Which, of course, I mean, that's a serious problem. How do you see, maybe intervention is not quite the right word, Brad, but just how as adults we should relate to these kids?
I think it's, first of all, important for us to try to get into their mindsets and remember the social dynamics of middle school, how important being popular and being accepted really is. I think it's also important not to try to fight the system directly, to take on the popular kids as a teacher in a classroom. It's fighting, as Mitch says, an uphill, if not a losing battle, because there's so much at stake. So finding sort of subtle ways to reinforce other behaviors without it appearing as if you're treating some kids as the teacher's pet is a good approach, but obviously a very challenging one.
I mean, what happens, I'll go back to you, Brad, but what happens if you take one of these so-called cool kids and pull them aside, you know, without their peer group around, are they a different person?
Yes, generally speaking, because they're not on stage. And so that's a much better way of dealing with any behavior problems that exist. And also, of course, to hold standards in play there, so that I think a lot of teachers will find who the cool kids are and almost play up to them and try to become buddies with them. Not necessarily a really good idea. It's important that cool kids be held accountable to the standards of behavior of the school and classroom as much as the other kids are.
Well, I have to say to you and to our listeners, we've got a group of kids who are in the studio watching and listening to the show, and one of them said, my group of friends are less popular, but we're very close. We know each other better than the popular kids know their friends. Mitch, let me go back to you. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. We don't know very much about differences in friendship quality, but we do know that there are different friendship dynamics that seem to occur. The kinds of things that kids get pleasure from and the kinds of things they talk about differ between the different subgroups in a high school.
So popular kids might talk or have a certain kind of friendship, and the more nerdy, geeky, outcast friends have different kinds of friendships?
Likely so, and then that likely is very influential in how these kids develop over time.
Because I'm thinking there are, and I say nerdy and geeky as a compliment, but there are nerdy, geeky kids in school who are popular and who have their own way of doing things and seem to get respect for that kind of behavior, Brad.
I think that's fair. The system that we're describing here in very general terms plays out in different ways in different communities. So there are some schools in which being smart and doing well in dramatics or band and orchestra is part of being popular. And in other schools, those are great roads to geekdom.
Someone put on our Facebook page that Bill Gates has said, you know, be nice to geeks because you're going to work for one when you grow up. And I think he certainly does qualify. Let me get Bonnie from Doylestown to join our conversation. Hi, Bonnie. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Hi, I just wanted to say I was, quote, one of those popular kids when I was a child, and didn't even think of it in those terms because that's an externally imposed perspective on me. But, you know, I was a cheerleader, captain, or president of my class and so forth, and I became a middle school teacher. And what I found successful was to focus, because I was considered one of the cool teachers, too, luckily, focus on the kids that you want to be recognized and admired by other kids, because the cool teachers can influence that.
Bonnie, I'm curious, what I don't doubt you, what makes you a cool teacher?
First of all, I was young, and, you know, in middle school, I was young, and my teaching partner was also young. We were young females, and we had a lot of energy, and we also loved teaching and got the kids excited, oddly enough, about vocabulary and history. So we were the teachers the kids would talk to before class started. And it was just, and it wasn't just us. There were other teachers that kids gravitate toward or think, are, quote, the good teachers or the fun teachers. And we can influence the kids that way. Ignore the kids that are, behaving in a way that you don't really think is modeling behavior for the rest of the kids. And for the other kids, for instance, one boy in my class, his name was Doug, he was a wrestler. And I gave him a lot of kudos and attention and positive feedback, and he became more popular.
Interesting. Well, Bonnie, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Mitch, anything you want to say or add to what Bonnie said?
I think it's a great example of the power of popularity when it seems like someone popular is admiring an attribute or a certain behavior, then that behavior becomes cooler by definition, and kids are willing to be influenced and will move towards new behaviors, even vocabulary, it sounds like, if they feel like it's associated with popularity.
Hmm. What do you think, Brad?
Absolutely true. I think that's a great example. I think it might be a little disheartening for the teachers who don't consider themselves to be part of the popular group or be highly regarded by students as to what the strategies are that they can use effectively.
You know, oftentimes when we talk about middle school or high school, we talk about bullying and bullies. And I wonder, do they fit into this conversation, Brad?
Oh, absolutely. I think part of that bullying is a really difficult set of behaviors. And we used to understand it primarily as just mean kids or kids who really weren't thinking about the consequences of their actions. But it's more complicated than that. There are those sorts of bullies. Mitch referred to them as the more aggressive kids earlier on. But there are also the enforcers of the social norms, the mean girls, who really do this to make sure that they maintain their status at the top of the social heap, and also that the kids begin to understand how they're supposed to behave now that they're becoming older.
You want to add to that, Mitch?
I completely agree. And we've had some kids say, the reason why I bully other kids is because it makes me seem more powerful. It makes me seem cooler to show that I can be dominant towards someone weaker. So it does seem to be very much a strategy for enhancing your own popularity.
But it seems talking about this age group in particular, I guess talking about school, is that hierarchy and social status is so important. And it sounds like kids, they know where they are on that hierarchy scale, and they know where other people are. Is that true, Mitch?
Well, they think they know.
Or they think
some
they know,
kids,
right.
Some kids are not very good at knowing where they stand. That's also part of this high school reunion kind of phenomenon. The kids that think they were very popular and they weren't, or vice versa. But it is a very, very salient part. And most kids can tell you in great detail exactly what the social hierarchy and what the different groups may be. And often they're reflected in where people stand at school and what table they sit at.
This is not scientific. This is just some observations, Brad, but I've always believed that, you know, they're the early bloomers and the late bloomers, and it's the late bloomers sort of like the turtle and the hare. Late bloomers like the turtle sort of end up being maybe better off than the early bloomers?
That's
Can we say that?
possibility. So the early bloomers are put into situations where their bodies look like they're ready, but their minds may not be. And that may be one of the reasons that they get involved in some of the problem behaviors that this study is pointing to. Late bloomers, on the other hand, particularly among males, just seem to be really behind the times, and so it's a little bit more difficult for them to catch up. Late bloomers among girls, on the other hand, are maturing about the same time that the boys are, and so those social dynamics, those romantic dynamics, can be more in sync, and that might work well for them.
Is it harder for boys to get through adolescence, Brad?
Oh, gosh. What a difficult question that is. I think the middle school years seem to be emotionally much more difficult on girls than they are on boys. But the total picture, I just really wouldn't venture a guess.
What do you think, Mitch? And then we'll get to back to our callers.
Yeah, I think that's also a tough question. I would say that it's tougher for girls these days. I think that the pressures, especially for early developing girls, are unique. They are having to field a new set of expectations and a new set of demands when they're barely able to cope with that or to even understand it in some cases, early maturing girls in particular. But in addition, I think our society puts pressure on girls in ways that boys just don't experience, boys don't even think about. And I'm talking about weight-related pressures and attractiveness and the social pressures to be able to succeed socially in ways that no one expects boys to be able to do as well.
Well, we're talking about adolescence and talking with two people who study adolescent behavior. That's Mitch Prinstein, also with us, Brad Brown. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. If you want to talk about your own adolescence or you have an adolescent you want to talk about, or perhaps a teacher of adolescence, we want to hear from you. And again, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Coaim. Let me get to Beth from Northwest Philadelphia to join us. Beth, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there. Good morning.
Good morning.
Many years ago in Washington, I went to middle school and high school with Warren Buffett. Now, you might call him a nerd, but nobody paid any attention to him at all. As a matter of fact, he was the best friend of my next-door neighbor, Donald, and I didn't even know that. Well, years later, began having reunions, and he's a wonderful guy, by the way, and he comes back to all of them, and all of the aging football players and cheerleaders pounce on him with cameras. You know, they all want to be photographed with this nerd that they never paid any attention to many, many years ago. So I thought that was kind of a fun story to share.
It's a very fun story, Beth, and it's why sometimes people like to go to reunions. Does that make sense to you, Mitch? I mean, it helps to be very wealthy, too, when you grow up.
It's an interesting story for the high academically achieving, those really smart kids. You know, they start off in elementary school being the teacher's favorite, and they tend to also enjoy lots of positive regard from peers. Kids like them, and they do well. And at some point in middle school or high school, things change for them. Being smart is not cool anymore, unless you can pull it off with some other cool attributes. But simply being smart and quiet, studious, that's not cool anymore. That's doing what your parents want you to do, not what your peers want you to do. So there's a period of them falling out of favor, but there is good evidence to suggest that intelligence, of course, will be useful in college and beyond, and can be related to success in other ways that we measure it in adulthood.
Brad, we haven't really talked about the loners, I mean, the kids who really are outcasts in middle school and high school, and that can be such a painful experience. I think, you know, kids can remember that as adults for the rest of their lives. What should we know about the more sort of loner outcast kids?
Interestingly, we talked about two different kinds of popular kids, the nice ones and the more aggressive ones. There are two different kinds of loner kids as well. One group seems to be outcast and alone and sitting by themselves at the lunch table. But really, that's because they have a social life and an active set of friends and so on beyond that particular school situation. Those kids seem to be doing pretty well. They're not terribly interested in or affected by the school social system, and they have some good social connections. Those, on the other hand, who don't, really do suffer and have a higher degree of insecurities and potential for more emotional problems as they move through the teenage years and into the young adult years as well.
And they suffer because they are alone, or people make fun of them, or they sort of don't exist within this world?
They don't, and you sort of recognize that you're on the outs. There was an interesting study by Margaret Finders a few years ago where she followed a group of these kids. They were the ones who never had their yearbook signed, and they didn't even want to order a yearbook because they knew that was going to be a very painful experience. So when you're reminded about how unpopular or undesirable you were, that can be a very painful experience and have an impact on later relationships and even one's sense of confidence and competence in the work world.
Mitch, Jennifer Lynn, who's our Morning Edition host, came in here, and I see on the computer she thinks that boys are under the same pressure as girls.
Interesting. I think increasingly so.
Increasingly so. I guess you're talking about the pressures of appearance and popularity and body image, things like that?
Yes. I think there are some pressures on girls, specifically in those areas that really boys don't experience in the same way, or at least maybe didn't used to experience in the same way. But of course, sure, boys are experiencing a tremendous amount of pressure as well. And again, perhaps in increasingly similar ways over time.
Well, because, I mean, I'm not to sort of divide the world into boys and girls, but it seems, you know, to be athletic, I guess. I mean, that you get kudos for that. And I guess if you're not particularly athletic, that's got to be tough. And other sort of fitting in social pressures that boys have to feel. I'm sitting here, I'm sticking up for boys, just so you know there, Mitch. go ahead.
I think that makes sense. I think that's true. And, you know, there are increasingly different subsets of the adolescent group that are rewarded for different things, whether they're good at computers or computer gaming, or whether they're the skaters, or whether they're traditional popular or athletic. Boys are trying to fit in just as much as girls are, and it certainly can be very, very difficult. It does seem that most of these loners, many of them are often boys, the most ostracized, the most isolated kids, very often are the males.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about middle school and high school kids, who's popular, who isn't, and what it's like to experience those years and what happens when teenagers grow up. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. We want your stories. Talking with Brad Brown, professor and chair of the Human Development Department of the Educational Psychology Department at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Mitch Prinstein, Distinguished Professor of Psychology, also Director of Clinical Psychology at UNC Chapel Hill.
Hi there, I'm Gian Gomeshi, the host of Q. Tune into Q each day for your dose of arts, culture, and entertainment, from live music and feature chats with compelling cultural figures to debates on the issues of the day. Q has got you covered. That's coming up from PRI, Public Radio International. Weeknights at 9, beginning August 4th on WHYY.
The new film Boyhood shows a 6-year-old boy and his older sister actually grow up. It's not a documentary, but a fiction film shot over the period of 12 years. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Richard Linklater, who wrote and directed the film. His other movies include Slacker, Dazed and Confused, School of Rock, Before Sunrise, and Bernie. Join us.
This afternoon at 3, and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
the troubles that are never over.
The American government invested untold political capital, and this thing that the police are trying to do over there, it makes no sense to me.
The Northern Ireland troubles come alive in an oral history project that could put U.S.-UK relations on a collision course. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We are talking about teenagers and school and growing up. We have a tweet from Melissa. She says, I'm starting to feel thankful for my nerdiness. Let me get, looks like Burke to join us on Radio Times. And Burke, go ahead. You are on the air.
I'd like to stand up for popular kids in school.
Good for you.
I was popular and cool. But I was also pulled aside by a teacher as I was entering senior year who said, as I recall, I know what you're up to, don't try it. And what I was up to was a campaign, hidden campaign, to run for student council president. And he said if I did run and win, all the other options available to me, such as editorships of the yearbook, the newspaper, and so forth, would be denied. So I indeed took his advice. I didn't realize anyone else knew what I was up to, and did not run for student council, and indeed became editor of this, that, and the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think teachers can have an influence on students, and I think being cool or trying to be popular is not so bad, especially if someone is trying to be popular because of some personal or family problems. In my case, my parents were being divorced at a time when being divorced was not cool. So as a way to distract people from that situation, I decided to become ultra cool and ultra popular. I also might want to point out one other thing. I think
sure.
There's a difference between being cool and popular if you're playing a sport that's not so aggressive. My sport was baseball versus the more aggressive and macho sports, football and baseball. Those guys who I saw were popular, but they also had a kind of a mean streak. And I think there's a big difference between being cool and kind of gentlemanly, as in baseball, and cool and kind of bullyish, as you might see in some football and very popular basketball players.
Well, Burke, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and I'm glad he raised the sort of what he was into as a teenager growing up, Mitch, because he said to be cool, sounds like he was covering up for the fact that his, emotionally covering up for the fact that his parents were divorcing, going through a hard time, using cool as a way of coping.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, some people are able to specifically do things to enhance their image and to change their level of popularity. And it sounds like if you feel like you want to focus mostly on peers, you want to try and do things that will make you cool, it's a good place to get reinforced. It's a good place to maybe not have to be coping with some of the difficult things that are going on at home. Some other kids, though, try so desperately to be cool and really want to be popular, but no matter how hard they try, it's just not going to work for them.
But it sounds like in Burke's case, and perhaps for some other adolescents, being cool is a kind of defense against other kinds of feelings. Brad?
I can imagine that may be the case. So much of adolescence, as well as I suppose so much of adulthood in our society, is a matter of image, projecting a particular image. How many times have we been surprised by the people in our community that we think have everything together, and then their life in one way or another falls apart? Mm-hmm. So we really want to try to encourage individuals to come to grips with the situations of their life and to be true to their own sense of self. But we do have some sympathy for individuals who, during certain moments, will seek some support and acceptance when other domains in their life are not going well.
Burke, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Mitch, are there certain kinds of parenting styles you think that are helpful for teenagers to help them get through this, what can be turbulent period?
I think that parents should not shy away from talking directly with their adolescents about this. And much like Brad was saying before, I think it's important to really get in their world rather than judging it or talking about it as not being important, to really understand that from adolescents' perspectives, this is extremely important. It affects their every minute of the day while they're in school, and joining with them in understanding how important it is, explaining how to help navigate it and to cope with these as real stressors. I think sometimes parents might talk about it in a way that says, oh, this won't matter later, or it's not really a big deal in the grand scheme of life. But that tends to fall on deaf ears when you're talking with kids this age.
How do you see it, Brad?
Very much like Mitch does. I think it is really important. For those individuals who are having a difficult time navigating middle school, there is hope, because life changes again in high school, and there are greater opportunities to achieve popularity, or at least to achieve some recognition among peers in a variety of ways, even as Brooke was talking about earlier. I think Mitch is right in saying it's not good for parents to say, oh, this is not important, you'll grow out of it. But to try to nurture the strengths and the skills and ambitions that young people have and watch them blossom in high school is a good way of moving them forward.
Because I would think for some kids, they are caught between their peer group and their parents or the adult world. Brad?
Yeah. Yes, I think that is very often the case, particularly if either the adults are too preoccupied with the peer world and trying to get their kid to be the most popular possible, or, as Mitch indicated before, oblivious to that world and not attentive to the needs to change the way that the family operates so that the teenager feels comfortable operating with peers.
Let me get, looks like Peter from Valley Forge to join our conversation. Hi, Peter. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Just a question for your two guests.
Sure.
Before I pose it, I'll just say that I was what my friends and I affectionately called ourselves D-listers in high school, and I think we grew to take sort of pride in that. But the question for your guests is, I wonder what they thought of maybe a slightly different strategy on the part of teachers to really sort of take the idea of popularity and just assume that you know, young people are always going to want to be popular no matter what, and to sort of encourage that while simultaneously trying to redefine the criteria for what, you know, why you should be popular. You know, basically approaching the kids and saying you should try to be popular, but for certain good reasons, and discouraging those negative behaviors at the same time.
Well, Peter, we had a teacher that called in earlier, but let me see what Mitch Prinstein has to say. Mitch?
I think that's a great point. I think that teachers can do a lot to try and influence what kids think popularity might be, why they think it's important, and the different kinds of things that kids seem to value. And that does differ from school to school, as Brad was saying earlier. There might be things that teachers can really make seem much cooler in a particular school that in a school down the road, it might have a very different kind of connotation. So the teacher's influence on that process is a really important one that people haven't studied enough, frankly.
Well, and we heard from our cool teacher, Brad, earlier in the hour, who was a cool kid, as she said, cool teachers can help out. I mean, cool teachers can help all kids, it seems to me.
We hope that all teachers can help all kids, but
yes,
of course in different ways. And I guess my advice to teachers would be, first of all, be aware of the peer system and the sort of rules of the game, and as much as you can, who the popular kids are, who the loners are. Second of all, don't join it. Don't reinforce the system by playing up to the popular kids the way that the kids themselves do. Third of all, don't fight it. Don't fight it directly by trying to deny the system, because in many ways you just play into the power of the kids. But through more subtle ways, I think individuals can be effective. If you are a popular teacher and well-regarded by the kids, well, then you have great advantages. But I'm aware that a lot of teachers don't have that particular position, so they're going to have to be a little more creative in how they enter into the fray.
Let me get, looks like Zay, to join our conversation. And Zay, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
So a few minutes ago, or a while ago, you guys were talking about bullying.
Yes.
And So I'm in high school now, and I think the way you were talking about bullying and the definition, I think, is sort of antiquated. And, you know, now, or maybe it's also a socioeconomic thing. I go to an upper middle class school.
Okay. Where do you go, Zay? Where do you go to school?
Lower Merion.
Lower Merion, okay, which is just outside of Philadelphia, suburban high school. Yeah.
Right. So I think the way you're talking about bullying, I think it doesn't really apply at my school. And most people who aren't in that small, popular, mean group sort of like look down on bullying, and everyone else does. And I'm friends with a lot of people in the popular group. But I'm also good friends with a lot of people who aren't. And I think the people who aren't realize that it's mean, and everyone else realizes it's mean, and it's just looked down on now, which I think is sort of an interesting change over time.
Indeed, Zaya, I appreciate the call to Radio Times saying that the bullying, at least in high school, or his high school, is looked down on. Is bullying, Mitch, a problem in the lower grades, or is there a shift, do you think, that all of a sudden mean bullies are not seen as the popular kids so much?
This is a great point, and something that we've started to notice in our own research here in North Carolina as well. There's been so much emphasis on bullying and many ways in which people are talking about anti-bullying campaigns, and it does seem to be changing the landscape. Kids are telling us now also that it just doesn't happen in the same way that it used to anymore. We are seeing that it happens, though, in some other subtle ways. Kids that are ignored on Facebook or on Instagram, kids that are excluded from activities or are somewhat talked about behind their backs, but maybe not in the overt kind of name-calling way that we would see in the movies from a couple of decades ago. So it seems like there are still ways that kids sort themselves and, as Brad was saying, enforce social norms or let kids know where they fall in the hierarchy. But it's being done in really interesting, subtle ways we're starting to learn as well.
Brad, anything you want to add to that?
The world of middle school tends to be very different from the world of high school.
Yeah.
Bullying is much more extensive and overt in middle school. Kids do grow up, as Jay is pointing out, very effectively. But as Mitch indicates, kids also get more sophisticated, just as adults do. And so the ways of excluding other individuals are subtler, but still can be as powerful for those who are affected by them.
Let me see what Julia from Bedminster, New Jersey has to say. Julia, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I had a question as to see what the research has to say about kids who are not part of the regular, everyday school environment. So kids who may have medical problems that are pulled out routinely, kids who are maybe from military families who are compelled to move often, or maybe who are involved in a lot of sports programs that require them to travel, so they have kind of alternative educational opportunities, mm-hmm. I guess. So I'm just wondering what the research has to say as far as how they and their peers interact. Do they find themselves as loners? Are there more opportunities for them because they are given different opportunities? Do they have to fight harder? Do they get into more so-called trouble? Yeah, I'm just curious what, if any research shows anything about that, or what some comments are about that.
Julia, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Mitch, have you looked at that?
That's a great point. We have the field defines some of these kids as neglected status, the kids that are not nominated by anyone as being someone that they like or that they think may be popular. And often that was because they simply don't know those kids. They might not be around quite as often. And we know that this is the least stable group of all the groups in schools. They're very able to become rejected or become popular and really move around quite well. Some of these kids tend to have a fair amount of social anxiety and have a hard time, given that they have not been able to establish close relationships. But others of these kids become really good at navigating brand new social networks, finding ways to interact with folks, given that they have limited time and that their environments are changing so often.
I mean, it seems like those are the kids that have really highly developed then social skills. If they, especially, I'm thinking of military kids that maybe move every year or two and they have to figure out how to fit in. Mitch?
They can. That's absolutely right. But it's interesting. It's unclear whether these are kids that would have been equally successful had they stayed in one school the whole time, or if something about the frequent moves has forced them to really learn skills that otherwise they wouldn't have learned.
In the couple of minutes that we have left, to you, Brad Brown, how does it – I'm asking this as a parent. So how do you help a child have a healthy adolescence?
Nurture their strengths. Find something that the child enjoys, is good at. Try to encourage their involvement in those sorts of behaviors. They may not be real popular if they're into music or drama, public speaking. In the middle school years, things may be a little bit more challenging, but if you can continue to build their strengths and confidence in those areas, those are the kids that are going to blossom into the Warren Buffetts and Bill Gates later on. So I think being very understanding, as Mitch has indicated earlier, to take seriously the challenges that the kids are going through with their peers is really important, but also to nurture those sources of strength.
Do Mitch, final question, do adults, including parents, do they listen enough to their adolescent children or students?
I think that it would be ideal if adults took their adolescents and children's emotions very seriously and gave them an opportunity to learn coping skills. Adolescence is a time that's awkward for everybody. Even the most popular kids will tell you that it was a time where there was some emotional turmoil and some ways in which they experienced new emotions at increased intensities. This is an opportunity to teach kids how to cope. And over time, as they grow up, those skills will pay off as they have more stressors, different kinds, but still more stressors for decades to come.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you. Mitch Prinstein, thanks very much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
And Brad Brown, thank you very much as well.
My pleasure.
And go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program, including podcasts and Facebook, Twitter. You can sign up for the newsletter, and you can find us on satellite radio. Emily Hawes helping us out this week. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us.